And anti-abortion bills have been reproducing so rapidly in state after state that this year has already seen 43 measures pass state legislatures. About to become measure number 44 is Texas's controversial abortion ban. Just a few weeks after Texas State Senator Wendy Davis famously helped to kill an anti-abortion bill via an epic filibuster, it was revived by Governor Rick Perry this week and passed by the state house yesterday. In Wisconsin, a judge has blocked enforcement of an abortion bill after groups filed a lawsuit against it, and North Carolina lawmakers will vote today on a bill on motorcycle safety, to which, bizarrely, anti-abortion legislation has been attached. These are only a fraction of the battles raging over women's reproductive rights all over the nation, and joining me to discuss it is Jody Jacobson, President and Editor-in-Chief of RH Reality Check, a daily publication providing news, commentary, and analysis on sexual and reproductive health issues. Welcome to Uprising, Jody.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let's talk about Texas first. Wendy Davis, whose stand against a bill has shot her to stardom, she helped bring this issue into a national spotlight. It also sparked what many are calling a sort of a new wave of progressivism and activism on particularly women's reproductive rights in Texas. But now the bill was revived. It passed the House. What's next?
Well, basically, as you know, Governor Perry created a special session just to push this bill through. In fact, this is the second special session. Limiting women's reproductive rights is a very important goal of Governor Perry's and the Republican Party in Texas. So what's next is that the bill will be going through the Senate. We'll get a final vote. We expect it will pass because there's a majority far-right Republican and Tea Party group in the Texas Congress that is going to pass this bill come hell or high water, and they've shown that it's come hell or high water because of the antics that they've engaged in to get the bill passed. You know, secret meetings in the middle of the night, secret votes, limiting testimony, all sorts of things like that. What it means for women, though, is that there will basically be 5 clinics left in a state which is geographically and in terms of population, one of the largest in the nation.
5 clinics. What about Wisconsin? A slightly different bill there. This one focuses on restricting abortion doctors, I understand. It also does require women to get an ultrasound before an abortion. And there was a lawsuit filed just this week by the ACLU and Planned Parenthood that has resulted in a judge essentially putting a brief moratorium on enforcing this bill. But what exactly does this bill do if it were to go forward in terms of, and what does it mean for Wisconsin? Are you surprised to seat in a state like Wisconsin?
No, because again, you see in Wisconsin the legislature has been taken over by Tea Party and far-right GOP congresspeople. So I'm not surprised to see this in Wisconsin. And basically, what it means for Wisconsin is the same as in Texas, another state in which all but a handful, in Wisconsin I think it's 2 or 3, clinics will be forced to close. And let's be clear about, you know, the details of these bills vary somewhat from state to state, but they all have the same exact intentions. And those intentions are, one, to eliminate early safe abortion, access to early safe abortion, by making women go through so many hoops that they can't possibly access it, and also by closing as many clinics as possible, so that women, particularly in rural areas and outside large cities, have difficulty gaining access. And then on the other hand, even though these bills push women into later pregnancy as they seek to terminate a pregnancy they might want to terminate, they will have no recourse because there will be no later-term providers left. So it's really all these different means, the forced ultrasounds, the unnecessary medical tests, the extra visits, the closing clinics, all together serve to make more abortion less accessible, more expensive, more time-consuming, and really to force women to carry pregnancies to term no matter their own personal circumstances. Mm.
Now, Ohio has a law in the works that would bar public hospitals from accepting transfer patients from abortion clinics in case of an emergency, which is just bizarre to me. So I understand that basically means that if there was an abortion clinic that had some kind of an emergency, an anomaly, that they wouldn't be able to transfer the patient to a public hospital. Isn't this antithetical to the anti-abortion people? If a life is in danger, why would they restrict access to an emergency room?
Because, quite frankly, and I realize it's shocking to people to have to confront this, but it is a fact that it's not about the life of women at all. It's not, you know, the pro-life agenda is perhaps the most misnamed political effort in the history of the United States. I mean, these are not people that care about the safety and welfare of women, per se, and they certainly don't necessarily care about the safety and welfare of children, because what they're doing on the other end is, you know, eliminating all manner of social safety nets for low-income children and children who need school lunches, children who require access to nutritional spending like the SNAP account. So what you have is a very mean-spirited movement that's seeking to punish women for unintentional pregnancies and to force them into bearing children. Mm. So if a woman dies in the process, it's been said to me very plainly, that's just how it goes.
Wow.
So this is really, while, you know, again, I think human nature is to try to think the best of people, but this is the actual outcome of these policies, and they can't be ignorant of the outcome of these policies.
Now, you referred earlier to the means that some lawmakers and governors have used to try to pass some of these bills, special sessions, secret sessions. North Carolina is particularly bizarre. Yesterday, anti-abortion legislation was attached to a bill on motorcycle safety.
Well, this is, again, you know, this is, when you look at these efforts, you see how desperate these people are to take away women's rights. First, they started...
And that they might not be as successful if it saw the light of day, if their actions saw the light of day.
Absolutely.
Is that the implication?
Absolutely. Hmm. They will be successful. They are, you know, determined to succeed in this effort. And in those legislatures where they have the power of the vote to do so, that even despite public opposition, which is very strong in all of these states to these bills, you have, you know, shenanigans like in North Carolina, where they started with an anti-Sharia bill, which, you know, on the face of it is almost like a headline from The Onion, right? You have people in North Carolina worried about Sharia law, for one thing, why? And for another thing, imposing Sharia law on women through an anti-Sharia bill.
Right.
It's almost comical if the actual consequences in real people's lives weren't so dire. And so now that that bill has failed, they're tacking it onto a motorcycle safety bill. One thing has nothing to do with the other. What they're actually doing is making medical care for women less safe and less accessible.
I want to turn back to what you were discussing earlier about the sort of motivations of this movement that's pushing these bills. Governor Rick Perry, when State Senator Wendy Davis in Texas took her stand against the bill there and launched her filibuster, made a very patronizing comment about how she apparently hadn't learned from her own mistakes because she was a teen mother and was raised by a single mother. An amazing woman, by the way, put herself through Harvard, I believe. But this attitude from somebody like Rick Perry, and of course, many in this movement, I'm not sure if it's a majority, but it might be, are men. And this attitude from Rick Perry that, you know, she just hasn't learned from her mistake, it just reeks of such a sort of patriarchal and patronizing misogyny.
Well, you said it better than I can. It is patriarchal, it's patronizing, it's condescending, and also, quite frankly, he was wrong. As Wendy Davis pointed out in a subsequent interview, she actually wasn't she wasn't not born to a single mother. She was born to a two-parent family, and her father left them at the age of 12.
Mm-hmm.
So she actually, you know, he got her own life story wrong, and she used that that episode to, you know, underscore how he's trying to tell her story, and she's lived it, and she's dealt with it. And what she's trying to say is, we each have our own story, we each have our own circumstances, we each have our own families, we do the best we can, and we make the best decisions for them that we can. And who is Rick Perry to tell me what decisions I should or should not have made, or what any other woman should make? And yes, it's beyond condescending. And you're also right, it's a vast majority of men who are running this movement.
Finally, Jody Jacobson, given the many, many simultaneous front lines that are taking up this battle, how coordinated is the state-by-state strategy? Since, of course, on the federal level, Roe versus Wade still stands, but on the state-by-state level, these efforts are very much coordinated. Is ALEC behind this, the American Legislative Exchange Council? And if so, what can be done about it by ordinary women everywhere, for example, in states like California?
It's a great question. We are right now looking into the background and the funding of different groups like this. We know that the Susan B. Anthony list, the misnamed Susan B. Anthony list, which supports anti-choice candidates, supposedly, you know, as a women's rights platform, is behind funding many of these different legislators. And we have seen some evidence, and we're trying to confirm and link it, showing that they have worked together with the American Legislative Exchange Council in many states. And in fact, for example, in Texas, Jody Laubenberg, who is the congressional rep who introduced the 20-week abortion ban, is also the state ALEC chair in that in Texas.
There you
so
go.
You've got these, you know, connections there. We're trying to document them. But there are, you know, there's the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, the National Right to Life Committee, Susan B. Anthony list, ALEC, all of these are funding very far-right politicians at the state and federal level. And what women and men who care about public health and human rights in this country can do is help fight back, be present, you know, make yourself public, go out and join the protests, help fund organizations that are funding progressive candidates. You know, make your opinion known to your legislator. There is no time that we have to waste on these things.
Jody Jacobson, it's a pleasure to have you on. I want to thank you so much for joining us today. And we'll link to your website, rhrealitycheck.org, from our website, uprisingradio.org, later today. Thanks.
Thank you so much for having me.
Jody Jacobson is president and editor-in-chief of RH Reality Check, a daily publication providing news, commentary, and analysis on sexual and reproductive health issues. Again, that website, rhrealitycheck.org.